Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host, Nick.
I'm Imran.
I'm Colm. That was quick, Imran.
Yeah, I thought we didn't rehearse this beforehand, so one of us better jump in.
Yeah, there is a bit of a hierarchy sorting out over there, but yeah,
we've got welcome to the professional podcast that is United Hour.
Yeah, the dream team trio. You're lucky listeners today. There's not been three of us for a long time, basically. That's why you will actually be getting an Imran's quiz today. Imran's stupid game, which has been well overdue. So you've got that lined up for the end of the show, right, Imran?
I do. Everyone's turning off already.
We were hoping to have some transfers to talk about, but we haven't got any yet. But yeah, we'll still talk about the transfer rumours and out there. Some of the fixtures coming up pre-season. We'll be discussing expectations for the season and the captaincy. So yeah, various things to chat on over here. We are recording this on, what day is it? I don't know, Thursday?
Thursday the 23rd.
Thursday, and pre-season training kicks off on Monday. And we've not signed anybody yet. I mean, are you worried about that, Imran?
No. Yes. Don't really know what to think, to be honest with you. I feel like it's a bit of an annoyance, but at the same time, I have very little expectations from our club. So it's hard to get too riled up. And then, obviously, while you want new players in at the club for pre-season training to hit the ground running, especially when you've got a new manager, I do feel like it's weird. Like, transfers are those one things where, like, we know everything about football. We know absolutely everything. We have access to all these things. But really, when it comes to actual inner workings of transfers, we don't really know what goes on or why negotiations can take so long. Especially like these transfer sagas and stuff. I mean, you used to play Football Manager and they want 80 million. You say 75, they say 79, and then it happens in like, what, a day? So when it drags out for weeks, we don't really know why. And I mean, we can get into it with the De Jong transfer and why it will be taking this long and why United are taking a hard stance perhaps and why Barca want the money. But am I worried? I mean, try get emotions out of me and for United and it's difficult at the moment.
Colm, how much does the situation worry you of no players in so far?
I mean, I'm not loving it so far. In terms of the window, I am trying to reserve. I'm trying to not give my mental health to this summer, if you know what I mean. Because I just think people do that and it's, I don't think it helps anyone, truly. I know people enjoy that kind of mania. I personally don't. I also, just what Imran was saying about what we don't know, Yet we know literally nothing about transfers, and yet we have an army of now internet people telling us they do know things about transfers, even when they clearly do not. So it's just so difficult. You know, it's like even you, Nick, who, you know, only gets involved when BBC are involved. I think everyone else is looking at it a bit more than that in terms of the tweets and the rumours and all that. But it's hard not to become very involved. And then when you become very involved and you follow Manchester United, it's hard then not to become extremely frustrated, and that's really how every summer goes. So each summer I say, look, I'm just going to reserve judgment, wait until the final day. You know, things are complicated, things are difficult, you do not understand the inner workings, and you have to have some sort of faith. And obviously, even with a new structure, you know, you think, oh, that faith should be starting at a neutral level, not, you know, in the bin where it would have been with previous regimes. But even then, it's just so easy to get into this, why haven't we, you know? And it just doesn't, from the outside, look that great or that cohesive to me at all this year, you know? And there's a few things, but I mean, just buying 6 Ajax players to me seems absolutely bizarre and very worrying, you know? Good players or not, it just seems like, oh, you've just hired Ajax manager, do you want 5 of his old players? It just seems like it's not going to work well, if it even transpires to happen.
But then we have to wonder how much of that is just the press putting 2 and 2 together and making 10 Ajax players, because, I mean, they live off transfer rumours, and what's the easiest transfer rumour to make than players from their old club? And it only really seems to me that really the only concrete one seems to be Antony, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, I mean you De Jong is obviously ex-Ajax.
Yeah, but De Jong is not an Ajax player.
Yeah, but then also on that point, you know, okay, you can pick the 5 Ajax players. We've also been linked to like 174 other players so far in 1 month. And to me, it's just like, how can anyone take that seriously and not just understand that they're literally being used for clicks? Like, it's shameless. And Manchester United, I just would love to know if other fans feel this way about the transfer window or feel this way about their club, you know, and how their club performs in the transfer window. Because I just think we get such a peculiar strand of media that's totally Manchester United centric, if you know what I mean. And I just don't wonder if there's the same mania and exposure given to City or indeed Liverpool around their targets and their deals. You know, is Red Cafe's Liverpool equivalent going mad every day and getting, you know, 80 tweets about which players they're signing and which players they aren't signing, half of which is all made up? It just seems like those clubs get to operate in a much more chilled kind of zone, and their deals always just seem, and this is also not just down to the media reporting but very possibly down to the clubs and how they handle themselves, but just, oh, everything seems so much more straightforward and so much more, you know, Haaland, Nunes, even when they're selling players, I mean, they're going to get apparently, you know, 100 million for Bernardo Silva, which just seems crazy to me. You know, it just seems, everything just seems easier and better over there away from United kind of thing. So it's very hard.
Well, I think there's 2 things, right? That Manchester United is always selling the most media, doing the most clicks. Everybody likes to love, hate, whatever. But also, I mean, City and Liverpool have made signings already. So yeah, I'm guessing their fans are a bit more relaxed, whereas we haven't made any. I mean, I'm normally not one to moan about transfers. I'm normally pretty relaxed. Like you say, I take virtually no notice of all the transfer rumours. My kind of gold standard is when something comes up on BBC, then it's actually time to start thinking about it. And
on teletext or
well, those are the best days, yeah. I remember I actually used to be at school and like transfer rumours used to go around. There was no internet, nothing. Somebody would say, oh, we've bought Matt Letizia today, and you had no idea until you got home whether it was true or not.
I found out we bought Andy Cole on teletext. What a great night. Exactly. What a great day that was when I found out we bought Andy Cole on teletext.
And remember, there was no transfer window. It could happen any day of the season. Any day of the season, it could just be, right, we bought this player today. And then I can't remember what year it was when the whole transfer window thing came in. But
do you think that's a better system?
I don't know. It's kind of open to abuse now.
Too much money, really, basically, isn't it?
I mean, like the whole soap opera now. You know, the transfer window is a soap opera. It's just sells papers. It sells clicks. People are watching the rumour and people are going mad on Twitter. Why haven't we bought anyone? And that's what it's all about. And like, you didn't used to have any of this. There'd be obviously rumours and like speculation, but it wasn't this huge thing. But I do kind of understand it, that for certain clubs and maybe smaller clubs, it protects them when you have a window that you can't just have bigger clubs coming in at any point in the season saying, right, we want him. And, you know, people can plan for the season a bit more. I think the window probably does make sense in general, but it's more just the whole noise and, like I say, yeah, it's a media thing about it that's slightly annoying. But, you know, I will say that I am actually disappointed that we haven't secured anybody yet. Like, you know, 3-4 days till the start of pre-season training. I mean, I know even if somebody like De Jong was signed, because he's played internationals, he wouldn't be starting on Monday anyway. But for his, you know, it's more for Erik ten Hag's planning to know what is his squad, how can he start thinking about formations, tactics, and, you know, once he's got players that are locked in, then he can start thinking about things. And the other thing as well is, once you start getting a couple of players confirmed, then you're more comfortable in who can go out. you know, we always have this situation where the club hold on to certain players until somebody else has come in, and then we end up stuck with too many of them because it's too late in the window to get rid of somebody like that. You know, we've seen six or seven leave, but surely we're still going to see more players going out. I think, Colm, you said, right, that you're more interested still in who leaves the club.
Yeah, in a very defeatist sense, I sort of am, in that I just think there has to be such a strong line in terms of this rebuild that we're now in again, and a reset, and a kind of a shot across the bows. I would like to think to the players who remain, and also just, you know, to the wider world, to say, look, it has obviously failed, and therefore we have to take this action, and we're not going to carry on giving big contracts to players who are then just going to hang around for, you know, huge amounts of time, even after they've proven themselves essentially useless to us over and over again, season after season. And I just feel that whenever a new manager comes in, it's almost, and this is almost a problem, is that it's a new leaf for everyone, even the people who don't deserve new leaves, if you know what I mean. So I'm seeing a lot of media reporting now saying this person wants to stay and fight for their place under Eric Ten Hag. This person wants to stay in the fight place. And like, the club shouldn't be allowing this. Now, I appreciate it's not just that easy to sell people on high wage contracts who are coming from Manchester United, but I also feel like the club could take the stance of just essentially incurring losses on these people, that it will still be smaller than the losses of paying their wages, essentially just get them away. And I know you have to, I mean, we're so threadbare in some places, you know, striker, I think you look at Anthony Martial, there's probably a good argument now that we just simply can't afford to let him go unless we know we're going to buy someone. So probably a lot of these deals won't happen until much later, if they can happen at all. But to me, I would still much rather, you know, if Martial left, if, say, Wan-Bissaka left, if Telles left, if we could get rid of Eric Bailly possibly, including Pogba and Lingard, going to people like that, and we only signed one or two players and it left us short for a year, it wouldn't really bother me, because I still see it as productive. You know, ideally, yes, we replace everyone to the standard that we would want, but I don't think that's achievable necessarily in one window. I do think it is more achievable to get rid of players, and I would therefore still be pretty okay with that, because there's just people, I'm sorry to say, I just don't really fancy seeing any United shirt for very much longer. And I do think we'll just experience similar problems that we always have with each of those individual players who have their own issues, you know. And that's not to say that there isn't one or two of them who could have a resurgence, or whatever the first instance of a resurgence is under Eric Ten Hag. But I wouldn't want to, you know, I wouldn't want to put my eggs in that basket really for this season.
I think, look, we've already had like 5/6 players leave. I mean, like I say, Greenwood's in that kind of limbo. We're not expecting to see him again. He's not actually left, but we're not expecting to see him play. So kind of counting him as somebody who's left. And like you say, there is still going to be surely more players leaving the club. We always have, and we've always traditionally held on to players too long. There'd obviously been some decisions coming from high up where they wanted to like retain transfer value. People like Rojo, Romero were just kept on for no reason whatsoever, even when like deals were offered. And I hope this summer, you know, like you say, they just let people go so we can have free up those spaces, bring somebody else in. There is obviously going to be some transfer budget, but then I think some will depend as well on bringing in some money. And like, you know, the ones you mentioned are the ones who could actually bring in some fees, whether it's Martial, Wan-Bissaka, Bailly. There's several around there. And then, yeah, there's plenty of youth players who can maybe step up and take some squad spaces. But I'm still expecting, I thought that by now we'd have one or two players before we go on kind of tour. I would have expected at least 2/3. And by the end of the window, I was really thinking we're going to have 5, maybe even 6 new names in. I mean, yeah, do you think that's unrealistic, Imran, or is that what you were thinking?
That's what I was thinking. Now, that's what I was saying. In my heady days of the Eric Ten Hag beginning times, I was like, oh yeah, we could buy 4 or 5 players here. But I think I even said on this podcast, I expect about 5 in. Usually we buy about 3, and this time I expect about 5. But to be honest with you, it looks like it could be about 3. Although there is still
plenty of time.
I still think it could be 4. I still think we'll buy a right back. I have a defender of some sort, but I do not think we'll buy a defensive midfielder, because we just don't. That's not something we do. We don't buy defensive midfielders. We make do without, and that's just the way it is. Everyone has to get used to it.
Yeah, I did see this suggestion go out that apparently it'd come from Darren Fletcher that Harry Maguire can play defensive midfield.
Oh my God, kill me. Oh my God. Do you know what I saw? There was a graph. No, I know I said, I know I just went on a bit of a rant there about releasing as many players as possible. I saw a graph that was like currently Manchester United's available midfielders for next year. And honestly, it made me vomit into my mouth. It was like Fred, McTominay, Jimmy Garner,
Pereira.
And Andreas Pereira. Yeah, I think that was it. Basically, actual midfielders. I think they might have thrown in Bruno as a...
We still got Donny van de Beek.
Okay, yeah, okay. But, like, it's not it. It's not it. Do you know what I mean? I was like, Christ, that's... You just see... You get the odd graphic, usually from Paddy Power, someone that just really brings you back down to earth. He's a United fan when you forget just how tragic a position we currently are in. But that was a big one for me. But, you know, more so than even pure numbers for me, I agree. Like, I mean... We'd all want five or six deals. I think we were all hoping that we'd kind of learned our lessons and that with some... I mean, we've been pretty ruthless in the restructuring of the organisation and getting rid of some people and putting other people in positions to do a better job, hopefully. And I certainly don't want to judge them before time. But at the moment, I'm not bowled over by the inferences that we can draw from all the media reporting. But more than even a pure number of people, I'm mostly concerned not by the glacial pace of our negotiating, which I just take as a given. It's even the profile of player we're going for that actually concerns me more than anything, Nick. And it goes back to what I said at the start about just buying Ajax players. But even the complete... I haven't seen us linked to a defensive midfielder.
I mean, look, two, as I say, for me, the gold standard is BBC. And the only two that they've reported on, so for me, this is real... you know, we've actually made offers for these players, is Frankie de Jong and Christian Eriksen. They're the only two that BBC
neither of them
were
defensive midfielders
out.
Like, they're both good players, don't get me wrong. Frankie de Jong, like, just to get onto it, he is obviously a top class, probably still in the talent bracket, hasn't quite, you know, done the full business of Barca, but I mean, one of the top keep possession, keep it moving, tick-attacking midfielders in the world. And that's great. I think when he becomes available, you have to try and sign him, definitely. It does smack a little bit of us putting further eggs in the disgruntled star who doesn't really want to come to United, but sure, if you offer him enough money, he probably will basket.
But sure, the Ten Hag link negates that a little bit.
Yeah, the Ten Hag makes it ever so slightly more palatable, but we don't know how good a relationship. Well, obviously it's a good relationship, but we don't know that that's just simply the best. Are you saying if Ten Hag's at United and PSG are in for him, he'd rather come here? Or if we have Ten Hag but Man City wanted him, he'd rather come here? Because I don't think he would.
I have it on good authority that Ten Hag is in line to be godfather to De Jong's unborn child.
Great, that's good. It's good news. But I'm just concerned. My concern is not really with De Jong. It's chasing the De Jong saga and him not really. My thing at the start of the year was, if we had assigned five players and not spent more than 30 or 40 million on any one player, I'd have been delighted. Do you know what I mean? I don't mean to undervalue our club or our draw or our aspirations. I just felt that we really wanted to go for the kinds of players that Leicester and Wolves and other clubs pick up that we then buy in 2 years' time for twice the price. You know, I really thought we could adjust our strategy to getting the likes of a Basuma or a Sangare or someone just a little bit more under the radar, but that's well known enough to think, you know, he will be a decent player, or, you know, if he goes to the right spot, he should be a good player, rather than just going straight for which world-class want-away star can we find, you know? And that just concerns me a little bit. And again, I would love the Eriksen transfer. I would be very happy with De Jong, although I'd be very concerned that his head wasn't fully in it. What you could also get is someone who feels a bit shafted by Barca and wants to, you know, completely reinvigorate his career with all the talent in the world. That can go obviously extremely well for you. But they need a defensive midfielder to play with. Otherwise, we're going to have very many of the same problems that we had last year. And the fact that we're not even linked to any gives me a real pause for concern with regards to our strategy here.
But yeah, I don't know, like, maybe, you know, tactically, does Erik ten Hag play with a defensive midfielder? Maybe he doesn't want one in particular. We don't know what formation he wants to come up with. It's not traditionally the way he's set up before, from what I understand. He doesn't have
if
pure
we're going five
kind
at the
of
back,
number six.
I would say it's fine. If he's 100% committing to five at the back, then that's fine. If he's not, I think it's very dangerous.
And, you know, we even heard that, like, Donny van de Beek, for example, played number six quite often for Ajax under Erik ten Hag. So he's kind of happy with that kind of more sitting holding midfielder rather than your more, like, destructive destroyer defensive midfielder. So, yeah, look, we have to see in which way he wants to go. I mean, I personally don't actually care who the players are. As long as the manager wants them, I'm okay with it. But yeah,
I do get what Colm's saying is that we've gone for these big money signings, and we always get burned. And whenever we seem to spend north of what 50 million, it just goes horribly wrong.
I mean, when's it worked? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like it never seems to go right. And has it ever gone right? I mean, Sancho, obviously, we can't really call that now. But I don't think it ever goes right for us when we spend north of that much. So I can definitely see. And I was the same. I said it on here. I said, you know, I'll happily take a couple of players for 30 million, 40 million max, and they're not the big household world star names, but you know, they're people who want to come to Man United and want to do a job for us and they want to play in a system. But I get, you know, Frankie de Jong comes available, Ten Hag has a relationship. He might not want to leave Barcelona, but then he might not want to leave Barcelona, if they push him out the door, it doesn't mean he doesn't want to play for us, I don't think. Which means he might not want to leave Barcelona.
Yeah, 100%. And I think he's like a once in a, you know, I think you just have to jump at that opportunity if you think there's a sniff there that you can get him. So I totally understand why the club is committing to that. And I don't think that's an issue. My only concern is I think the entire level of the squad in every position needs brought up, not one star in one position. I think that's done. And we've let ourselves have awful fullbacks, awful wingers, but we bought this £90 million centre midfielder and we asked him, Paul, please make it all okay. And it went horrifically. And I just see that this is, we've literally just gotten rid of Pogba and we're going to basically bring in the exact, very possibly the exact same problem in that you're going to neglect your right back, you're going to neglect left back, you're not going to sign a defensive midfielder to carry the water, and you've got, you know, dubious wingers at best. And instead of signing three or four players in those areas to give you real strength and depth and at least push the kind of average level of the squad up a good bit, you're saying, Frankie, help us, please.
Yeah, which is why I was hoping we'd sign four or five players in the beginning, just because we need reinforcements in those positions, like the other areas.
I'm telling you, we're still going to be bringing. It might not be till like this window's open till September, and we're only in June, right? Even though we know the season starts obviously early this year because of the World Cup in August. But this window is still open till September, so we will bring in four or five players. And, you know, we might. That is what we didn't want, though. You know, traditionally we've been scrambling around on deadline day, seeing who we can pick up and players come in, and it was what we didn't want, especially not for a new manager. A new manager. I was more relaxed about it because, you know, last season, whatever, Ole's got his squad, they're kind of settled, and he's trying to add to it, whereas this is a whole new start. So this is where the manager needs his players in place ASAP to plan for the whole season. And that's why I am like more bothered this year than I might have been for the last couple of summers about getting players in earlier.
What I do worry about is I don't want us to spend all this time under Young for it to end in naught. I get why it's taking so long. We don't want to seem weak. We've got the new negotiators in. They don't want to be seen as caving to demands, especially then other clubs, obviously, going to take us that same ride, and it's going to happen like it's been happening for however many years. At the same time, Barcelona have a price and they don't want to, they need the money as well. We know they need the money. So we think we hold the cards, but then again, they want their, so I get why it's taking long. That's a very long window.
We know they need the money. Yeah, they know that he's our number one target and that the manager absolutely desperately wants it.
I mean, I think it's like 95% likely to happen.
I think it's pretty much agree, about 90-95% going to happen. But at the same time, is it worth happening? Is it worth getting Frankie de Jong, say, for argument's sake, three games into the season, four games into the season? Or is it better to get a player who's maybe not as good now?
No, I'd take, if you're content that you're looking for that profile of midfielder, which I accept I'm going to keep bringing up, and we're not really trying to even have that conversation at the moment. But yes, if that's the midfielder you want and you say, I can have him or I can have a worse version of him, but who does the exact same kind of thing, i.e. not an actual defensive midfielder, give me Frankie de Jong on the fourth game of the season. Give me a month into the season, 100%.
Yeah,
you know,
Cole,
because,
no, the
you know,
manager, Erik ten Hag, he's decided this is who I want. He's what he wants.
And that's, you know, we do want to back the manager supporting.
We don't want a situation where transfer decisions are taken by a board that the manager, it's not in the manager's hands. You know, we are understanding that Erik ten Hag has taken a more strong approach in saying, I want to choose the players, whereas before players were chosen by kind of committee.
I just think if you know, you know, I mean, we've just outlined the situation. So I'm sure they're patently aware of how they would expect this transfer to go and that it might run on for 4 or 5 weeks longer, just due with him being away on holiday, Barca not being in any rush, and obviously having their own vested interest and trying to squeeze as much money out of us. So, like, let me ask you this. How often do you think we speak to Barcelona about this? Like, once a week?
By WhatsApp, or is it fax, or is it?
Do you know what I mean? Talking? So are we flying out there? Are we having meetings? Is it emails every day? Is it phone calls? These are the things.
We'll talk a bit more about it, but there was this whole, obviously, Richard Arnold ended up being videoed in the pub with some fans, right? And he said, Manchester United officials are in Barcelona right now negotiating this transfer. He said it on video. That was like,
a
couple of days ago.
Like, are they flying in on the Thursday and home on the Friday? Or are they there for 2 weeks solid? These are the things I want to know, because what the big issue at United often seems to be is simultaneous deals. It's just not a thing. Can't happen.
We can't do two deals at once. I'm amazed that we're in for Eriksen, apparently. How can that happen at the same time?
If we have two guys with a briefcase out in Spain, it's impossible for anyone else from the club to drive down to Brighton to get Bissouma. It just can't happen. All right, we can't spur the manpower. We are a £1 billion or whatever, £4 billion, £5 billion business, and we just haven't got the guys, I'm afraid, to do that. I just don't understand. And again, like, so much of this comes from what we're given. So you hate to be so steered into that narrative that I'm sure the media love to play up to, if you know what I mean, that United are slow and cumbersome and all that kind of stuff. We have no idea. But that's why I'd love to know.
We have seen it. That is our track record, you know, for years and years. And you were hoping that a kind of new regime has come in and that things are going to change. But it doesn't seem to have changed
much. What I would say about this one is that spending 70 million Frankie de Jong does massively change. If we do that, that massively changes your transfer strategy after it.
Yeah.
So, especially
that,
if we say,
go
you say we have
the way with other transfers, spent. It's not like, you know, yeah, so adjust your thing. But again, they'll have a thought as to how. Ultimately, you have to hedge your bets at some point. You have to be strategic about it. And they'll have a plan for every eventuality, essentially, I would hope. So if they say, look, we think we're going to spend about 70 million on De Jong here, and we want him the most, and we're not really considering any other big ticket midfielders, so we're going to go hard in for him. So that only leaves us, say, 70 million for these other three positions. You three, go and work on that for me. You know, send them off, let them work. And if they come back to you and say, look, we've agreed deals for 30 million for this guy. We think we can get this guy for 20 million. We think we can get this guy for 50 million. No, that's a bit much, but blah, blah, blah. And then if in 8 weeks' time, the De Jong deal falls through, you just don't get that midfielder. And you just say, right, we strategized and it didn't work out. We got these other players who were a bit more bargain than we wanted, but we still thought they were good players. It shouldn't be that difficult. You know, there's good players rolling around for, you don't have to spend 60 million to know you're getting a good player, like, you know.
Yeah, well, look, I don't want to spend an hour talking about transfers when we haven't even had any, so we're going to take a short break, and after that we will come back and talk about season's expectations.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, so yeah, look, it's quite difficult to talk about expectations for the season when we don't really know what a squad is, when it's still early in the transfer window, because, you know, what happens in the transfer window will make a massive, massive difference. But, I mean, Imran, Erik ten Hag is starting. We've been here before, you know, fifth time lucky we're going for now. Yeah. What are your expectations for him? What do you think would be, like, the minimum kind of you expect from this first season under Erik ten Hag?
That there is some sort of competent football going on, and we can all see, I see what's going on here. It might not be coming to, but I see what's happening on this pitch, and it kind of makes sense. It's very wishy washy, but that is my. To be honest, there was a friend on the Red Cafe that make a prediction, but and I actually think we might actually be surprisingly competent this season. Like, I think we could surprise a lot of people by just how basket case we are. And if that's an expectation, then that is my expectation for us to just be a bit normal.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I'm still expecting a top four challenge because I'm expecting that we will sign four or five players at least. So, and I'm expecting that players who failed us miserably last year will step up. And I'm talking about Maguire, Shaw, Bruno, Rashford, players who we have seen deliver for us before, and not just for one season, a couple of seasons. You know, there's others I'm not expecting much from. Martial and Wan-Bissaka, whatever. I'm hoping they leave and we get some money in for those kind of players. But yeah, as I say, for me, I expect that we are going for top four, make a run in the Europa League, maybe one of the other cups over there. And for me, that should be the minimum expectation. Even though, look, a new manager does deserve time. It's going to take him a while to get going. But I don't see why we shouldn't be going for that straight away.
I mean, the thing with that is, like, say, so in that case, say if we get to December and we are 12th, would you be calling for Ten Hag's head? No.
It depends. Because it depends on the results. Point, it depends on what's going on exactly.
I think unless he was like playing De Gea up front or something daft, or doing just the most batshit crazy things like bringing on Nick Powell against Wolfsburg. There is no way that I can see myself wanting Ten Hag to leave, because ultimately I would rather ship every single one of these players out the door before him.
Exactly. So it's kind of like the Ralph effect. I mean, I think the fan base is still a bit divided on Ralph, in that some people by the end were like, what was this guy brought in to do, and how has he managed to fail so spectacularly, Imran? And then other people are like, go ahead, Ralph, you're a legend. It's the players. We hate them all. We agree with you. We love your press conferences. Don't worry about the actual football, because, you know, we're past that basically as a football club. We don't need a manager who gets our players to play well. We just need one who slates them afterwards, which is certainly the camp I was in. And I think Erik ten Hag will occupy a very similar space. Now, I don't think he'll be able to be as candid as Rangnick was, obviously. But I do think a lot of people will... give him way, way, way more rope than the players. Because what's the alternative? I mean, you've now got what is thought as one of the best up-and-coming managers in the world. There aren't any people after that to go and get. We've basically had them all that are any use. So, you know, if not sticking with him for at least 3 or 4 years, or 2 or 3 years, you know, really what else are you hoping for? Who are you hoping will become available that will come to our club and rescue us, you know? So I don't really see that being an issue. In terms of Nick's, like, expectations, to me, at Manchester United, yes, there's like a blanket general statement you can say that, you know, we should challenge for top four, and I expect that. And that's fine. I just think you should change the word expect to hope every time you say it, basically, because at the moment, I don't actually think it's fair to expect that. That's an expectation based off Manchester United. That's not an expectation based off the reality of this squad, in my opinion. And you could say, I think we've got Cristiano Ronaldo, we've got this player. I expect Maguire to be better. I expect Shaw to be better. I expect. But what are we basing that expectation on? Or is it, in fact, just blind hope? And it's fine to be hopeful.
I'm basing it on the fact that 2 years ago, they were playing well, a lot better than they were last season, and you hope that we go back to that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you're also basing it off transfers that haven't and aren't even looking likely to happen. But
yeah, that's true.
What we have seen is Arsenal and Spurs actually make transfers, and quite coherently so far, with what I can see is quite an obvious, you know, plan and what I think look like good signings. You never know, obviously, until they start playing, and both those clubs are more than capable of taking a good transfer and making it look awful. But they're making progress this window that I don't think we have. Obviously, we haven't yet. Now, we might at the end of the day have 3 or 4 players that look much better than the players they've signed, but we just don't know that yet. But for me, like, in terms of expectations, I'm sort of with Imran. I just want to see a good manager make us play better football. I want to see players who have looked unmotivated and awful start to look like they care and start to look like they're tactically astute. And I would like to see good decisions being made in terms of who actually gets to be on the pitch and who doesn't. And after that, I don't really care. Anything above 7th, I will be happy with, because I don't think that we're a lock for top four by any stretch of the imagination. There just isn't enough, you know, information at the moment in terms of what our squad's going to look like and how everyone's going to gel with a new manager for me to make any kind of expectation on that. What I do put a lot of stock in this year, I think, is the Europa League. I think we have to be all in for it. I think it's a great way for Erik ten Hag to start with a trophy and start with a really positive piece of success that will maybe be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more easy than just guaranteed league quality performance in what is obviously going to be a tough league next year. And also it is probably an easier route back to the Champions League than necessarily top four. So that's just what I hope we have show good focus on, you know, from the start. But anything above seventh, I'd be honestly happy enough. If the football's good and we're going in the right direction. I know that sounds so tragic, but it's really just about if players start to play well and we become, you know, I don't expect us to turn into a great team, but if you can see the writing on the wall and we still mess it up every other game or whatever, that's kind of okay as long as there's a general trend towards some kind of consistent thing.
You say anything above seventh, yeah, but we had our worst season ever last year and we still came sixth and we were still in the top four race with like a month or so of the season left, and that was our worst Premier League season ever.
I don't think it'll be the case where the top five say are all class. You know, Spurs won't be great, Arsenal won't be great, Chelsea won't be great, Liverpool won't be great, and City, they won't all be great this coming season, if you know what I mean. They just need to be better than us at the end of the day. But yeah, obviously I think and I hope we'll do better than that. I'm just saying I'm not gonna, you know, hold any kind of strict, oh, it must be this kind of thing or it must look like this, because again, you know, you could finish second and play and not be very good, if you know what I mean, and it wouldn't be particularly healthy. If you like, I just want, it's like an eye test thing more than a number or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but look, if you're playing so-called good football and losing every week, you are not going to be happy about that.
No, obviously, yeah. Well, there'll be a reason why you're losing, like, and you have to quantify what good football is. Like, you could play, like, nice-looking football and get hammered because all your defenders are awful, and that's fine. But then you might think, you know, well, if in the summer we sort out our defenders, then we'll be halfway there. But, you know, yeah. Obviously. The things are kind of like,
we might play well every week, and then we might play well every week, and then Harry Maguire just launches one into our own net, and then you go, well... I can identify the problem straight away, luckily.
I mean, yeah, while we're on Maguire, did throw out on Twitter a captaincy poll and only gave four options, yeah? Bruno, Ronaldo, Maguire, De Gea. Is there any other option?
I think Luke Shaw.
Big Christian Eriksen when he comes in.
I think somebody in our WhatsApp did mention Varane, but I can't really see how you get to Varane ahead of Ronaldo. At the moment, 50% are going for Ronaldo. But I think that's just because if you put Ronaldo in an online poll, he just wins every poll. It doesn't matter what the question is. Ronaldo wins it.
Who's the shittest player out of these four? Ronaldo wins it.
People just vote for Ronaldo. As I say, half of our fans on there are going for Ronaldo. Then, like, Bruno's second, around 25%. There's about 20% going for De Gea. And Harry Maguire does not have many fans out there at all at the moment. I mean... as the best of a bad bunch of options, I would probably give it to Bruno.
I don't think Bruno's a great captain. I honestly think the refs absolutely despise Bruno. I think they despise him, and I don't think that's going to work out very well for us if he's our captain, because I have a general feeling that referees absolutely hate the man. And could you blame him? He just moans all the time.
Yeah, it's true. He does get emotional, a bit OTT.
But can you think of, like, particular decisions that refs have given against him specifically because of that? If you know what I mean, he's just a yap. You know, this kind of bothers me now with Bruno, and I think he's suffering some very undue criticisms, and he would be my choice as captain out of that bunch, with Ronaldo actually quite a close second. To be fair, I think Ronaldo has all the logical arguments there. I just think he's actually a much worse captain than Bruno for basically exactly the same reasons, which is temperament. Yeah. But... Bruno, you know, yes, he is yappy. Yes, he does dive around a wee bit, and he does look like a little sort of crybaby at times, quite often, a bit of petulance. He's also been the only player who's done anything remotely good at United outside of Ronaldo for like ages, and he just deserves better. And how draining must it be to play with those people, Imran? That's what you have to remember. Who's he surrounded by? A bunch of people who can't be arsed and who are awful. And it's just like, why wouldn't he? I do think it's in his nature, but I also think the other side of his nature is that he's just kind of that kind of combative, pernickety, big desire to win, super energetic, and he performs at the end of the day and he doesn't shirk responsibility. I don't think he's your archetypal great captain. I think in an ideal situation you'd have someone maybe more suited, but I think, I mean, out of the current group, I think he's head and shoulders the best choice, and it's not even close. And that speaks more to the rest of them than it does to anything particular about Bruno, in my opinion. But I do think, like, I appreciate he gives the ball away a bit. I know he had good kind of figures last year, but often he didn't actually play that well, didn't step up as much as he did, certainly in his first season. But I mean, still, like, his numbers were still, like, pretty much identical to De Bruyne's. Like, I get there's still a big difference.
Wait a minute. Bruno's numbers for kind of chance creation were high, but his goal and assists were way, way down on the previous two seasons.
On the previous season, because his numbers were like freakish. I mean, that's a pretty high bar. He was still producing at a very good clip for a number 10, I think, even last season in a completely dysfunctional team.
Anyway, Imran, that's two votes for Bruno. You didn't say who you're voting for.
I don't care.
Go on, you've got to pick
Fred,
one player.
Give it to Fred. You've got to pick. Give it to Fred coming around with Captain's armband on Carty. Looking like a madman. No, I mean, think about it though. If we did get Eriksen, and I'm very invested in us getting Eriksen, I think he'd be a great signing on a free, boss of the squad. Lovely man. Lovely footballer. I really hope he decides to pick us over Brentford. Also, because of the sheer weight of the idea that someone would pick Brentford over us, I don't think we can take that as a club.
But you're not saying you think Christian Eriksen is going to be our captain next season, are you?
Well, think about it this way: if the referee's on the fence about something, Christian Eriksen can just walk up to him and say, "You know, I had a heart problem."
what ref's
going to turn him down?
I'm a big fan of Eriksen, and I think it would be a great sign. I think on a free transfer for probably not a huge amount of money per week, I think it's an absolute no-brainer. I'm surprised more clubs aren't interested in it. I also thought his spell at Brentford, I mean, you think back to the game where he was very good against us, and also that he played a bit deeper. You know, I think he starts most weeks for us, no doubt about it. There's no way he's going to be our captain, having just come in on a free transfer there. I mean, let's be honest, it's going to be Harry Maguire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be Harry Maguire. It's very hard to take captaincy away from someone unless they're Granit Xhaka, basically.
Even if you're a brand new manager, which is arguably the easiest time to do it, unless the person gets banned or something like Rio, it's still very difficult, because what you're saying to that player is, if you're saying, Harry, I want to start you, but I don't want to be captain, for a man that is already clearly fragile, you're kind of condemning him to probably not a very good season, I think. You know, I think it takes... Mm. You'd have to dance around that very curve. It would take very good man management and a lot from the player to kind of just accept it and still continue to be, you know, good. I think that's dangerous territory. But at the same time, we can't be held hostage by Harry Maguire at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? In terms of once you have the captaincy, that's it locked.
The thing with Harry Maguire is, if he's going to play, he probably should be captain then, because why would you play him if you stripped the captaincy off him, right? You wouldn't do that. That's stupid, right? Because it's just going to destroy his morale, as you've just said. So if he's going to play, you kind of have to keep him captain, just because it would be foolish not to. At the same time, if you're not going to play him, you don't have to take the captaincy off him, because he's going to be on the bench and he's not captain anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, but the obvious answer to that dilemma is Harry Maguire will play. Like, I don't think there's a world in which he's not starting for us.
Right, so he has to be captain. I mean, like you said, I don't see a world where you can take the captaincy off him and he plays well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very difficult. I think there is probably a world where that happens, but I think in most of the other worlds, it doesn't work out very well. Yeah, I agree. That's why it's so difficult, that it might not even be a non-starter, that he just remains captain. But then do you lose buy-in from the rest of the squad who are saying, look, that man just had a pretty tragic season and he's clearly struggling under the weight of this. Maybe it's not even the best thing for him from a more kind of holistic view, you know, that someone should be the wise head to say, actually, your best football will come when you're not captain. So this is for you, as opposed to a slight on you, you know.
Surely the big player, if you're the new manager coming in, and you see Harry Maguire and you say, "Listen, I believe in you. You are still the captain." Surely isn't that if anything's going to make him regain his confidence?
I think that's what'll happen. I think, and you're basically kicking the problem down the road, where you can at least say, "Well, look, I gave you 3 months and you've been shit again. Yeah. So I am stripping you of captaincy, and also I'm dropping you. See you later."
Ultimately, the captaincy gets stripped when he gets out of the team. And if that happens, then he's not the captain in the team anymore. So it's a problem that writes itself, in my opinion. if he ever comes out.
It's kind of overplayed, obviously, in terms of the worth of it all as well, if you know what I mean, and the, and
yeah,
the meaning
yeah, I
of
think
it. You know,
well,
there'll be leaders in the dressing room who don't need a captain's armband to be a leader, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
And if Ronaldo wants to make a point, I'm sure he'll have enough heft behind him without...
Remember, Arsenal famously had six captains or whatever bullshit
yeah.
that was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a bit of an odd event. I do just think it becomes a bit of a thing because when it's so hilarious that it's your captain constantly kind of in the spotlight for making mistakes, etc., you know, that's obviously a detractor from the club as a whole. You know, it's kind of like a thing, obviously, that we saw last year, which now looking back just seems kind of funny.
Everything about last year is funny, to be fair, though.
Yeah.
No, I do actually think, yeah, I agree that I think Maguire is highly likely to stay, even though only 6.8% of our fans seem that they want him to stay as captain. But yeah, I do actually think it's the most likely scenario. So yeah, everybody's going to be pretty pissed off with that. Before we kind of head off into Imran's stupid game, I did just want to give a mention. I mentioned it briefly earlier about this whole Richard Arnold leaked video in the pub in Alderley Edge or something like that, I think it was. I mean... we were kind of looking forward to this big change of regime. Woodward's gone. The scouting team have gone. There's a lot of kind of focus now on how is Richard Arnold changing things. There was kind of some good signs of people going out. We're having a fresh start. I mean, I don't know what you think about this, about him showing up in the pub, having a chat with the fans and all that. I mean, did you watch the video, Imran?
I did. I mean, it's a weird one because, I mean, it's pretty good that he went there because, well, but then they were going to protest outside of his house, so it kind of makes sense for him to also go there to quell that because, I mean, you'd rather that than people protesting outside your house. And then he said the things you'd expect him to say kind of thing. I mean, it wasn't anything that he said that you'd think, why has he said that, or that's groundbreaking stuff. He said the things that you would say to placate a group of fans, and he said it well, to be fair. Ultimately, we can't judge the man because he's been in the job for a couple of weeks, a couple of months? Like, it's hard to really get a judge on him, get a read on him. It's just him saying things and we'll see if they happen. But, I mean, fair play to him for saying them, I guess.
Yeah, fair, I mean, I do think he's already kind of, like, done better than Woodward had ever done
Just by breathing like a competent human, he's done better than Woodward.
Yeah,
I mean,
very difficult to even imagine Ed Woodward in that situation, you know, bringing... I mean, something about the look of Richard Arnold just suits that better. I mean, I initially saw someone posted in, like, a photo of it, you know, and I was like, oh, is he just... You know, this is before any context of the protest or who he was actually mm-hmm. speaking to. And I was just mm-hmm. like... why am I seeing a photo of Richard Arnold with like 8 pints around him sitting down with frankly very poorly dressed people? I was like, this just looks odd. Is he on the Bevs? Is this his family? Are these his friends? I was like, what is the context of all this? It was very bizarre to me. And then it obviously came out that they were going to go protest and blah, blah, blah. You know, first of all, stop showing up at people's houses.
It's just
don't do it. It's not necessary. Like, it's great that you care that much, but just absolutely take it down a notch and just do something much more productive with your time. Also, I think he came out of it net positive. Like, I'm not getting Arnold put in the back of my United shirt this year. Do you know what I mean? But like, it's definitely a plus. He came across as very everyman. I felt, you know, he wasn't he just came across like a normal bloke. He didn't seem like a CEO or whatever his position is, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like highfalutin stuff, and that's exactly why I can't imagine Ed Woodward in that situation at all. But yeah, it was grand, really. Bit of a non-event, I thought. But it was kind of interesting to see. Well, I think he was quite like truthful, but again, if he doesn't know he's being recorded, and that's the message, you're obviously a different person in different situations. You know, you tailor your approach and what kind of version of yourself you're presenting very differently to, you know, four lads who were gonna burn an effigy outside your house compared to in the boardroom, compared to when you're speaking to Avram or whatever else, or in front of a press conference. So, you know, no one should really be filmed, you know, with their guard down and then it held up as some kind of example of their, you know, true self or whatever, because it's just not fair.
Yeah, and I mean, and to be fair as well, I mean, this has all come from this new kind of group that started on Twitter called the 1958, who are pushing a lot of kind of protest things. And they did actually, to be fair to them, organise kind of sizable protest towards the end of last year. It's still not clear who exactly is involved in this organisation. They're all a bit secretive and anonymous, but yeah, a couple of them. And that's why they were actually like annoyed then that this video came out and there's been a mass kind of fallout, which is like, so are United fans that, you know, they all start falling out with each other and arguing amongst themselves. And that's why nothing ever gets achieved. But I don't know that I've ever heard
of a secret fan group kind of thing, you know?
Well, this is it. This came out saying, you know, we're anonymous and this and that. And then they said, oh, the guy who put out the video is not actually part of the 1958. Then there was some other guy where people said, oh, he's put out a load of racist tweets. And they said, oh, he's no longer part of our group. And it was all like a lot of nonsense. And basically, yeah, Richard Arnold has actually played an absolute blinder here. Because as you said, he's come out quite net positive. Also made the most major protest group look like quite a bunch of morons and like various infighting going on over there. And I mean, I don't want to slag off the 1958 completely, because I do actually think there is a place for that kind of protest group, just to push the club, to push the Glazers. Whereas, you know, you have the likes of Moss, who are more like working inside of the club to talk them and all that. And yeah, I think the more pressure that's kept up can actually make some kind of difference. But yeah, ultimately, you know, these things all go down to the board. And I think Arnold was trying to push a lot of blame in other places. You could see he said a few things where he didn't openly say it, but he was basically saying that, look, in the past, you know, he didn't say his name, Woodward, but he was inferring that transfer decisions were made by the wrong people. He also didn't want to obviously slag off his bosses, but he was making a few comments
when he was like,
that maybe...
I liked when he said, like, oh yeah, last year I basically didn't even want to be at Old Trafford for the games. Like, I was like, yeah, man, that's how we felt. That's how everyone felt, basically. I was like, yeah, that's exactly the vibe.
Well, that's what he was trying to do, isn't he? He's saying, look, I'm one of you, I'm one of the boys, whatever, you know, it's... And I have seen some people suggest that this was a whole PR stunt, which I don't actually believe.
No, I don't believe that.
You know, he has come out of it relatively well in the end, but unless we get some transfers and things like that happening, then there is going to start being Arnold out coming out pretty soon, I guess. You know, Twitter is pretty unforgiving over there. But yeah, it was an interesting little episode anyway, and I'm sure the 1958 will be looking at protests and things like that when the season starts. It will be interesting to see what happens with it. I mean, often transfers and things like that do keep people quiet, and the club know that, and that's why a lot of news and whatever is put out there to try and keep people happy. But it'll all depend on where we're at on the first day of the season, which is a home game as well. You know, the season fixtures are out there now. Brighton,
well, it could happen a little bit sooner, because I think I read that the Glazers are due to remove a dividend of like 11 million tomorrow, possibly.
And we
haven't signed anyone yet, so it's kind of like our first signing of the transfer window is 11 million payout to them.
Oh yeah, there's a lot made of over this, as I say, to be fair, if you go on the Twitter 950, it have actually put out quite an interesting letter that could be sent to your MPs and things like that. And look, I think there's nothing to lose from this kind of thing, but they need to sort themselves out a bit. And I think you're sometimes better off listening to the likes of the Man United Supporters Trust, who are a bit more established. You know who you're dealing with. But as I say, yeah, do keep an eye on all this political side of things. We will have a quick break again here, and then it's going to be time for Imran's stupid game.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, at this point, I am going to hand over to Imran. We're well overdue one of these. And if anybody hasn't heard one of these stupid games before, you need to go back. Were they last season, or was it even like the year before?
When we used to have three people on regularly.
Yeah, but and we did have it. We had a whole raft of them at some point, and they went down pretty well. I know people have been asking. I think people have actually given up on hearing them again. But as we're in off season, we are back here with a stupid game. So yeah, I'm hand over to you, Imran.
Imran, tell people when you made this game.
I made this game about 6 months ago.
Good, yes.
So basically what happens is the stupid game appearances correlate with how fairly decent we are, because when we're decent, more people want to come on the pod to talk about us. So, you know, it kind of works like that. Anyway, yes, without further ado.
A wonderful game of football, which Manchester United have won convincingly.
But it was a breathtaking match, absolutely brilliant.
Shocking. I am
I'm disgusted with it.
Yes, welcome to Imran's Stupid Game. We've got two contestants here today. We've got Nick, who currently is in Marrakesh. Say hello, Nick.
Are you?
Hello, Nick. Yeah, I am. I'm on another work trip out here.
What he doesn't tell us is he's actually part of this Frankie de Jong correspondence, yeah. Transfer negotiators. This is what they do. They go to Barcelona and they go to Marrakesh for a couple of days. And then we've got Colm. Hi, Colm. Say hello.
Hi, everyone.
Colm's just off a stint of watching Love Island, so he is raring to go.
Which I was very disappointed by that. It's just so everybody knows, we had to delay this podcast for an hour just so Colm could watch Love Island.
United during the season, Love Island during the summer. It's all good.
Yeah. Right, so this game is called You Don't Know You Were Born. Yes, the basic premise is I will tell you a city and you will tell me which Manchester United person who was with us last season at some point, because some of these might have left.
was born there?
Basically, was born there, yes. That's basically it.
Cool.
Makes perfect sense, right? And I'll give you, each of you, so there's five each. 10 in total, 5 each. It can go across if you don't get it right. And you can have one, if you want a clue for each one you can, and I'll give you the capital city of this country that I'm talking about. So, to see who goes first, this is very good for the audio visual. Nick, which hand is the grape in?
Left hand.
It is in the left hand. Wow, well done.
You literally reached over with your left hand?
Yeah, but then I shuffled it around, so you see. Right, could have been in any hand.
All right.
Right, Nick, here we go. The city is Amersfoort. Oh, by the way, can I apologise for anyone from these places? I'm going to butcher some pronunciations, so here we go. Amersfoort.
What, do I make a guess now? And then
yes, you
give
do.
Me a
That's
clip?
How it works. That's right. How these things...
I'll go for Nemanja Matic.
That's incorrect. Colm, it goes to you. For the steal.
I'm going to go Van der Beek.
Whoa, wow. Straight out the gate, Colm. That is very impressive. Yes, Donny Van der Beek hails from Amersfoort in the Netherlands. Right.
I thought that was a decent Dutch effort, to be honest.
Oh, thank you. I was trying. Right. Your next, Colm, and the place is Burgos.
Oh, God. Burgos.
Burgos.
David Hare.
It's incorrect. David, it comes. David Hare. No, it's not David Hare. Nick, it goes to you.
Burgos, I will go for Bruno.
You've gone on the Spanish train, you'd have got it. It's Juan Mata.
Juan Mata, of course. Yeah.
It's Juan Mata. No one gets that one, but Colm is still ahead by one. Back to you, Nick. The place is Bragas. Bragas.
Bragas or Braga?
Braga.
Braga's in... Okay. I'm pretty sure it's in Portugal. Well, I'll go for Bruno again.
Incorrect, Colm.
I'm going to rely on... I think I know where Ronaldo's from, so I'm thinking maybe it's not in Portugal. Is it Teles?
If you've gone Portugal, even Diego Dalo.
Yeah, I knew it was
Dalo. I forgot we had another Portuguese player.
I know where Ronaldo's from, so after that, I knew it was Dalo, hoping Colm didn't get
it. He's from the island, isn't he, Ronaldo?
He's from Madeira, Portugal. Yeah.
Yeah, Madeira, exactly. That's it. Right, Colm, back to you. Still 1-0 up. Malmo.
This is easy, if I can remember his name. Anthony Langa. No.
Correct. It is Anthony Langa.
Oh, it is. Thank God. Yeah.
I would have actually gone for Lindelof, to be
fair. Yeah, that's why I figured people go straight for Lindelof. So.
That's why I said no at the end. I remembered that we also had Lindelof. No, I know where he's from as well. I know where he's from. Totally.
Okay, fair enough. Colm's obviously been doing his homework.
You know, actually, on the podcast, we actually mentioned that Anthony Langa was born in Malmo when his Cameroonian dad was played
did
for
we?
Malmo. So I should have actually remembered that. Yeah, it was mentioned on it when we did our Alanga thing.
All right, well, Nick, back to you. I'm sorry about the pronunciation of this one. It's Caxias do Sul. Caxias do Sul.
I'm going to go for Matic again.
Incorrect. I mean, it doesn't really sound...
All your accents sound like Eastern European. Every single thing you've said sounds Eastern European to me.
Colm?
How? Teles again?
Yeah, it is Teles. Colm is really good at this game. Like, impressively so, in fact. It is, yes, Caxias de Sol is in Brazil. It's probably pronounced probably Caxia or something. I don't know. Sorry, Brazilian listeners. Right, next. Nick. Salto. Salto.
Salto.
And remember, at this point, you can ask for a capital city if you need a clue. Neither of you have used it yet.
I think I know where Salto is. And I think it's in Argentina.
I would question your wisdom there, considering we don't have anyone from Argentina.
I was just thinking, Garnacho. But all right, Garnacho. What country? Go on then, give me a capital city then.
Capital city is Montevideo.
Oh, right, Uruguay.
God, is it?
Well, all right, Palestri.
It's
not. Are you saying the players have left? Like you say, it could be players who've left.
Yeah, it's players that have left.
So it's Cavani.
All right. Yeah, I'll give you it. You can have it. Because why on earth would you go for Palestri over Cavani?
Because I'm still a Man United player. But then I remembered you said he's still for us.
All right, Nick's on the board. 3-1 to Colm. It's going to take a miracle to come back. Colm, Sabak.
Sabak. Can I have the capital?
The capital is Belgrade.
Okay, Matic.
It is Matic.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Nick would have guessed Matic for that one as he has for everyone else, but yes.
You sounded much less Eastern European when you said that one.
Oh, I mean, there's some subtle racism going on here, guys, which we don't condone on United Hour, I should say. Nick, Backnang.
You're playing for pride now, Nick.
Although to be fair, this one's a difficult one.
What can I get a capital city again?
You can get a capital city because this one's actually difficult. The capital is Berlin.
Oh, okay.
Does that help you? Because it's not helping me.
Who have we got that's German?
We might have someone who's born in Germany and we don't think of them as German.
You have to think about what I said at the beginning of this game. That's all I'll say.
They probably don't play for us anymore, but...
How long ago did you do this game?
It's Schweinsteiger, I think.
You want to pass it?
Yeah, not coming up with anybody.
Colm?
I don't know, Jadon Sancho? Why on earth?
And this is where you get the stupid game from. Because I said, and I quote, Man United staffer is what I said.
Oh, jeez.
It's Big Ralph. Big Ralph Ragnick.
All right. Yeah, only thinking of players, fair enough.
You're only thinking of players. Got to broaden your horizons. Colm, your last one? No, who's next? Yeah. It is Colm, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bingerville.
What?
Bingerville.
Bingerville. I have no idea. Can I go in capital?
You can, but I'm not going to do a terrible pronunciation. Yamoussoukro. Yamoussoukro. Or Abidjan. I think it has two capitals.
Hannibal?
No. Nick?
So I'm pretty sure that is the capital of the Ivory Coast.
Oh, here he is.
That's what I was going to go with.
Which gives me two options, and I will go with...
You'll go with the wrong one, I promise you.
He did.
He went with the right one. He went with the right one. Yeah, well done, Nick. Very good knowledge there, Nick.
You know what? Yeah, I've actually been pretty poor at this because two of the places you mentioned, I've actually been to and got the wrong country in both times. I've been to Burgos and Salta and managed to get the actual wrong country for both of them. But there you go.
And the last one, Nick, Ivry Soussien.
All right, I need a capital city here.
Capital is Paris.
Yeah, obvious.
So I will go for Varane.
Incorrect.
Anthony Marshall.
Incorrect. It is Hannibal.
Oh,
and there you go, everyone. Now, today you learn that Hannibal was born in France, and that was the whole point of this whole game.
Gotcha.
Plays for Tunisia.
Tunisian?
Yeah, he's Tunisian. But born in France, because obviously, like, you know, colonizers. The moral of this whole story is that colonization is wrong. So that was another Imran stupid game.
Dreadful. Dumb and dumber, I'd call them. I thought they were really poor. I thought they were a joke. Really abysmal.
Fantastic.
Yeah, good
fantastic
effort.
Work.
Good effort.
Good. Home was a winner, by the way.
It is well for being made 6 months ago.
Yeah. It really does. Half of those players have left, or will leave. Yeah. So, you know. Colm, well done. Congratulations on another fine, stupid game win, I should say. Yeah, Colm generally is the man to beat in these things. So
I think that's actually the first time that I've lost a stupid game. So
I don't think that's true.
I did
fancy Nick, because Nick's a bit of a geography buff. I fancied him. He knows his cities.
The first time I've lost a stupid game, and I should have done
that. He's also an extremely well-travelled man. So
I can tell it's eating him up inside.
I should have done a lot better at that. Although I'm blaming your pronunciations and accents over there, I'm afraid.
He's watching United matches in more countries than I've ever been in.
And yeah, we might get a few more countries in the Europa League. Let's see what that draw is. But yeah, I can't promise you another Imran stupid game anytime soon. But yeah, keep bugging us on Twitter or whatever and we'll try and get one. If we're doing well, we might get three of us on back again and then you might get another one soon. Before we round off, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Manscaped. We had a bit of a laugh about their Father's Day copy last time. This time I've got some copy called Boxers 2.0. Sweaty sack summer is approaching and it's time for you to prioritize the comfort of your crotch. That's why the kings of crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer shorts out there. We will soon apparently have the honour of testing out these new boxes. I don't have them yet. And can say it will be the softest fabric of any underwear. Anyway, head over to manscaped.com. Use the code UnitedHour20. I mean, if any of you have had the performance package before, there were some pretty good boxes in there before. I've had as well. I think somebody on here had said the best boxes they've ever had. Those were as well. And apparently, these are the 2.0 and even better. So, yeah, UnitedHour20. Head over to manscaped.com. But yeah, I think that about rounds us off for this time. I was kind of wondering what we were going to talk about because they hadn't had any transfers since last time. But yeah, it kind of breezes by pretty quickly once you start getting into it.
I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is that Nick is going to send us all boxes in the post. So
yeah. Well, I've just refreshed the transfer tweets page and it looks like we're about to sign nobody.
All right.
Yeah, look, hopefully by the next time we record again, we will have some transfers to talk about. We are also just lining up to get an Ajax expert on to tell us a bit more about Erik ten Hag, so look out for that in the next couple of episodes. But anyway, look, whether there's any transfers or not, we will be back in the next week or so, sometime before our first preseason game anyway, on the 12th. As we say, Monday, some of the lads will be back in. But yeah, 12th of July will be our first preseason game against Liverpool in Thailand, and we will record again before that. But for now, good night from us.
Cheers, guys.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.